Srila Prabhupada ki,
Sri
Bhakti Vedanta ki, Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Giriraj Maharaj ki, Granitai Gopremanande.
Where is everyone? Temple? Something going on? Yogesh is here?
No, he's in the back. He's here, but in the back. He left
you. Okay. Okay. So we'll begin. Okay. Tonight we'll begin the chapter. Very late, Sean. What for? Sorry. Be on time.
Yes.
Nonsense. The only good one in the family is Srini Ketan. He has to teach the parents. Okay. So tonight we'll begin chapter 9, going from verses 1 to 20. So we see in the 8th chapter, there was the appearance of Lord Nrisimhadev, and then the subsequent demise of Hiranyakashipu, like that. So now we'll hear how, after the demigods have offered prayers to Nrisimhadev, not acceptable. Asita Raja, you should have come on time. You're here. You should be on time. Your son's here 15 minutes ago. Make sure you're on time.
Sure.
So then, after offering prayers to Lord Nrisimhadev, the different demigods, then in the beginning of this chapter we see that they encourage Prahlad Maharaj to go towards Nrisimhadev, and then we see the subsequent prayers of Sri Prahlad towards Nrisimhadev in this chapter. So tonight we'll go from verses 1 to 20, 9th chapter. The great saint Narad Muni continued, "The demigods, headed by Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and other great demigods, dared not come forward before the Lord, who at that time was extremely angry."
Shri Narottam Das Thakur, his son, in his prema bhakti chandrika krodha bhakta dveshi janin, anger should be used to punish a demon with envious of devotees. Kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, and matsarya. Lust, anger, greed, illusion, pride, and envy all have their proper use for the Supreme Personality of Godhead. A devotee of the Lord cannot tolerate blasphemy of the Lord or his other devotees, and the Lord also cannot tolerate blasphemy of a devotee. Thus Lord Nrisimhadev was so very angry that the great demigods like Lord Brahma and Lord Shiva and even the goddess of fortune, who is the Lord's constant companion, could not pacify him. Even after offering prayers of glorification and praise, no one was able to pacify the Lord in his anger. But because the Lord was willing to exhibit his affection for Prahlad Maharaj, all the demigods and others present before the Lord pushed Prahlad Maharaj forward to pacify him.
So what are the points here?
Devotees been offended. So we find that
find that Lord Brahma and Shiva and other demigods can achieve the Lord. The reason it is that one can understand the extent of the world. There is no reason for this human to divide the extent of the world to see you. And they basically do not take a step for it. It gives an idea of to what extent the world is so angry. And they were, you know, the people who can bless this world. This is the world of fortune. This constant companion. She could not love God. So, this is very much mind-boggling.
Well, Shiva was the only one who could have approached. You see, he understood the situation. Everyone else was pre-ordered.
And upon that
republic,
that you can do anything from coach, do more, manas, matralya. These sentences are considered in the negative sense. But what he's saying is, anger in itself is not bad. It is utilized in the proper mood, in the proper action. So, that's what I felt is why could the other demigods not pacify him was that Nrasimhadev Bhagavan was so very angry with Vasudev. So, anger, whenever anger represents fire, the more the fire is, the more water it needs to cool it down. So, and water is love. Who had the most love for him in that situation was Prahlad Maharaj. He had undergone all those turbulences in his short age. Who else could depict, who else had more love than him to pacify that level of anger in that assembly? It was only Prahlad Maharaj. So that's why only he could go in. You have to counter equal by equal. You cannot. So the devotee, that's why, is sometimes considered even higher than the Lord. At times like you.
Good.
No, the devotees are also devotees of the Lord. But they understand that they have some oil and reverence for the Lord. So, and whereas Arun and Prasad Maharaj, did he have all reverence or how was he able to approach here the demigods being a devotee on the same level, you can understand, but they're not able to approach. So is there a factor of awe and reverence which comes and where a devotee who is very intimately related with the Lord, he is not on that level, he is far beyond that. So is there a factor like this which also comes into it?
Yeah, it's not so much based on awe and reverence, but it's based on the fact that Prahlad Maharaj's level of purity is much higher than the demigods. Demigods are kama mishra bhaktas, which means there's some desire to enjoy materially mixed with their devotion. Whereas Prahlad Maharaj is a shuddha bhakta. Shuddha bhakta means that he is a pure devotee of Krishna. So because he is pure, there's no mixture of anything contaminated. So because of that level of consciousness, he can approach the Lord. Because he sees the Lord with affection, whereas the other devotees do not see the Lord. They're still mixed, so they don't understand his position as intimately. Just like if your father becomes angry, then, okay, you understand, okay, my father's angry. But you understand my father's not really like that, or normally like that. Whereas someone who doesn't know your father will become very. So the demigods, they don't have an intimate relationship with the Lord, so therefore when they're seen becoming angry, they become overwhelmed. Whereas Prahlad Maharaj understands, okay, he's angry now, but that's not his natural state. Does that make sense? Anything else? Lila Maya, that's ridiculous. What sorry? No sorry will pacify me. Ridiculous. Your husband is so well behaved. Your good credit is your husband. That is all. Any other point?
You say like one of the six characteristics of like pure devotional service is like Krishna Akarshana. So it attracts even Krishna. So you can see that Prahlad Maharaj, even at the age of 5, he was so pure in his devotional service that even when the time came for him to offer the prayers, then as soon as they became
his prema, Sri Krishna Kashi, one of the qualities. Okay, so Prabhupada is pointing out that these six faults which are there, lust, anger, greed, and the others, then if they are used in Krishna's service, they become purified. The nature of Krishna is that all of these things exist within him originally. So anger is also within him, as we're seeing now that Krishna is angry, God is angry, so it's within him. It's not external to him. Otherwise, he's not known as Purna. Purna means complete. If anger is not in God, then he's not complete. So it must exist within him. But he won't display it in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, it'll be very minimal. Any anger is very, very minimal in the spiritual world. But it's within him, so he needs to express it. So he arranges this entire pastime so that he can express his anger. Because that is a part of his nature. It's a part of God. So because it's a part of God, it's a part of everyone else also. Anger exists within all of us. There's no such thing as an unangry person. Akrota. Even though it is said that Lord Nityananda is the Akrota avatar, he does not display anger like that. But still, anger is within every entity like that. You'll see that Lord Nityananda in his form of Balaram becomes angry. So you see the painting in the temple room, and Lord Balaram is very angry like that. So anger is there in God. Anger is there in everyone. But it has to manifest in the right way. So, Narottam Das Thakur particularly says, in Prem Bhakti Chandrika, he says that these six qualities, if they are used in the service of Krishna, they purify one. So just like you have a thorn, the acharyas give this example, you have a thorn stuck in your hand, you take another thorn, and then you can pull out that thorn, you can cure yourself. So a thorn can cause you suffering, but a thorn can also be the cause of your relief from the suffering. It can cure you, in other words. So anger can bind you to this world, lust can bind you to this world, greed can bind you to this world, all the qualities. But if they're used in the service of Krishna, they can actually liberate us from this world. So lust, anger, and greed, if they're used properly, then they will liberate us. So we can become angry if Krishna is blasphemed or if the devotees are blasphemed. Then we should become angry. If we don't become angry, then that's a defect in us. Just like if we become angry unnecessarily, that's a defect. So it's also an equal defect that if someone is being blasphemed, if we don't defend them properly. Prabhupada actually said that we should be willing to put down our lives for the deities. Now, to protect the deities in the temple, then we should be willing to sacrifice our life. Now, to protect the spiritual master or the other Vaishnavas, we should be ready to sacrifice our life. So therefore, if we become angry in Krishna's service under those circumstances, it liberates us. It takes us out of the material world. But if you use anger in the other way, Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, lust, anger, and greed are the three gateways to hell. Like that. You'll go to hell if you don't have control of these three. But if you use them in Krishna's service, you'll go to Goloka Vrindavan. So we have to learn to harness these energies. Anger means that you use, if there's an obstacle in Krishna's service, you use anger to remove it. And you'll see Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada become angry, but then next moment, completely calm like that. So he'd only use anger for removing obstacles. One example is there in Prabhupada's Lilamrita, his pastimes. He was in Amsterdam and he was on television and Prabhupada was performing a fire jugya on the television live. So they had like half an hour. So the devotees were new. Prabhupada had arrived there. The devotees were new. It was the early 70s. And they didn't know what they were doing. So Prabhupada was there sitting there on the Vyasa San, and then all the devotees were there, and there was confusion and everything. And right on the television, you know, they didn't know what they were doing. And Prabhupada said, "Where is this? Where are the flowers?" And that man said, "Prabhupada, we forgot them or something." Prabhupada was like, very upset. It's live television. Prabhupada didn't care. Right? Live television. And then, where is the rice? Oh, Prabhupada, we forgot it. Prabhupada was, he was disgusted. You know? So he was yelling at people and chastising, and he was on live television the whole time. And then at one point, there was one bhakta, and he was standing next to Prabhupada's Vyasa sons, and Prabhupada was, you know, chastising this and doing this, and he was very upset. And then the bhakta leans over to Prabhupada. He was just like a new guy, only been in the temple for a couple of months. He leaned over to Prabhupada. He said, "Just chant Hare Krishna, Prabhupada." And Prabhupada looked at him and went, and then Prabhupada put his hands in his beads and said, "Hare Krishna." He actually started chanting. Amazing pastime. So then, Revati Nandan Swami, now he's a Prabhu, Revati Nandan, but he was a Swami back then, he was with Prabhupada. So then afterwards they went back to the hotel or wherever they were staying with Prabhupada. And when they left, Prabhupada said, "Get me some of the feast," because they cooked a feast. And they were serving it out to the audience, like after the show had finished, they served it out to all the audience. And so at least they got that right. In ISKCON, usually that's the only thing we get right, is prasadam. Oh, okay. Everyone's upset, but then, oh, prasadam. Oh, okay. Prasadam. So then Prabhupada said, "Give me a plate of prasadam." He was so angry he didn't want to eat. So he just said, "Give me a plate." He put it in the car. So they put it in the car in the back seat. They drove Prabhupada to the hotel. And then when they got there, then Prabhupada got up and he went inside. Revati Nandan Swami, he looked over the back and the plate had fallen onto the ground. Back seat. Upside down. The plate had gone, what is that? It's on the ground. And so everything just was hopeless that night. Everything was wrong. So he got it and then he like picked it up, put it back on the plate, and then he took it to Prabhupada. He said, "Prabhupada, this is what happened." And Prabhupada was just like, and I think Prabhupada ate it anyway because, like that. But then Revati Nandan, when Prabhupada cooled down a little, and then Revati Nandan said, Prabhupada, how do we understand when a pure devotee becomes angry? How do we understand? So Prabhupada knew what he was referring to. He did not say, you know, Prabhupada, why did you become angry? But he said, when a pure devotee becomes angry, so Prabhupada knew what he was referring to. So then Srila Prabhupada said, a pure devotee is like the ocean. So the ocean is very deep. But Prabhupada said, on the surface, there may be some turbulence. But that does not affect the deepness of the ocean. So Srila Prabhupada, sometimes you become angry. It's just like on the surface. Deep, deep, deep down. And it's not like that. It's the same with Lord Nisringadev. God is explosive in this pastime. But Prahlad Maharaj knows, okay, that's not his original state. You don't see Krishna becoming like that so much. Krishna becomes very angry too in pastimes, but only when he's fighting demons. Naimittika Leela. But in Nitya Leela, in the spiritual world, he doesn't become like that. There's no intense anger. It's only in this world that he shows intense anger. It's only when he has to destroy the demons that he'll show anger, but normally it's not there. Any points?
In London also similar example happened. His stage was not ready, so he was very angry. He lifted himself. Srila Prabhupada himself lifted the thing so that the thing doesn't fall. Remember, you know.
Yeah, London Ishwara. behind the curtains.
Yeah.
And the pillar began to fall.
Yeah.
And Prabhupada grabbed the pillar. Any other points? Disciples should just accept the anger, that's all. Disciples should accept the prerogative of the guru to be in any mood he wants to be in. Because, you know, the disciple wants the guru to always be happy and always smiling and always praising the disciple, but the guru is not like that, so. You have to allow the guru to be in whatever mood the guru is in. And when he's angry, then you have to accept that as being mercy. Like that. So you just have to accept it. That's all. Yeah, it means that whenever if the guru becomes angry, then the disciple should think, well, I've done so many stupid things in the past, which I didn't get chastised for, which I actually should have got chastised for, so now, you know, I should tolerate whatever I'm getting. Even one of my godbrothers, Mahahari Prabhu, then one time my Guru Maharaj, he chastised him, you know, one time. It was in a jugular, actually, because he forgot something. Actually, he didn't forget it. It was just... they couldn't find it at the time or something. He hadn't forgot it, but my spiritual master really got angry with him. And then later on he saw, oh no, actually the thing was there. And then one of my godbrothers said, oh, aren't you upset because he chastised you, but actually there was no reason to chastise you, it was just a mistake. And then my godbrother, he said, but so many times I did so many things which I should have been chastised for, but I didn't get any chastising. So he said, I just accept this. So that's the mood of the devotee. The guru chastises, you just accept it. That's it. Just put your head down and just accept it. Okay. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmiji, was required to go before the Lord by all the demigods present, who because of fear could not do so. But even she had never seen such a wonderful and extraordinary form of the Lord, and thus she could not approach him. So Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur explains that Lakshmiji was covered by Yogamaya. So because of Yogamaya, she felt she could not approach her husband in this form of Nisringadeva. So Yogamaya allowed her to experience the Adbhut feature of the Lord. Just like in Mayapur now, we're developing the Adbhut Mandir. Adbhut means like extraordinary. So, what is that? Yeah, that temple. Yeah, it's called, it was Lord Nityananda said this is Adbhut Mandir. Adbhut means like extraordinary. So Yogamaya is covering Lakshmi Devi at this point in time, so that she cannot see. Oh, sorry. So that she can perceive the Lord's Adbhut feature, which means like his extraordinary feature. So she's even she cannot approach him. But it's because of Yogamaya covering her, so that she can experience this situation. So, the only person who can approach at this point in time is Prahlad. Why can Prahlad approach? Because Prahlad is fearless. Why is he fearless? Because he understands this is the father. Okay. So, the father, you always trust in a normal situation. You always trust the father. So even when the father becomes angry, but still you know, that is my father. So Prahlad Maharaj is feeling like that. This is Krishna in this form of Nrisimhadev. So he is fearless. He does not fear that he cannot approach. Everyone else is just overcome, overwhelmed by the Adbhut feature, by the extraordinary feature. It's so powerful, this form, they're just fear struck, awestruck. They're just full of fear. Everyone's full of it. They're shaking. You know, all of us would just be beside ourselves with terror if we saw this form. You know, even if a lion just walked in the back of the room, we'd be beside ourselves with terror. What to speak of this, you know, form? You know. So, this is the potency of Krishna's form as Nrisimhadev, like that. But Prahlad Maharaj, he does not see it like that. He's the only one who is different. Lord Shiva also, but Lord Shiva will not go forward. He's allowing Prahlad to go forward.
I have a question here. It is said that if you have realized the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or if you know God, you cannot fear him. He's the only one who you cannot fear. Right? So, unless these demigods or these personalities or different nation here, at that stage did not realize that this Adbhut feature was God himself, how can they fear God? They cannot fear God. They can only...
Because
they fear God.
No, because they don't have pure devotion, that's the point. Srinath Ketan already asked like that. It's because they... Oh no, sorry. Prabhu already asked like that. It's because they are not on the level of purity, that's all. They don't have the capacity at this point. They're overwhelmed just by his ugra form, or his terrible form like that. So they don't have the purity. That's all.
They did not see God in that form. They could only see something different. If they know that this personality is God himself, then they can't fear. Because if you know this is God, you can fear anyone else except God. You cannot fear God.
Yeah, but only a pure devotee will see like that. Out of everyone there, only Shiva and Prahlad are pure enough that they won't see him like that.
True. What I'm saying, the distinction that I'm trying to make here is they did not see God in him. That's what I'm trying to say. If they could see God in him, they would not fear.
Hey, it's just a different way of saying it, that's all. But the point is the same. Any other point?
Could it be that Nrisimhadev has already lived through the Tila and he showed him when his father was asking, is he in the Tila? And he did and he said, yes, I'm here. Sort of. So maybe that gave him the courage.
Yeah, only Prahlad could see him.
Yeah. And that was because of the Tila.
Only pure devotees can see.
Yeah.
Anything else? Thereafter, Lord Brahma requested Prahlad Maharaj, who was standing very near him, "My dear son, Lord Nrsimhadev is extremely angry at your demoniac father. Please go forward and appease the Lord." Narad Muni continued, "O King, although the exalted devotee Prahlad Maharaj was only a little boy, he accepted Lord Brahma's words. He gradually proceeded toward Lord Nrsimhadev and fell down to offer his respectful obeisances with folded hands. When Lord Nrsimhadev saw the small boy Prahlad Maharaj prostrated at the soles of his lotus feet, he became most ecstatic in affection toward his devotee. Raising Prahlad, the Lord placed his lotus hand upon the boy's head, because his hand is always ready to create fearlessness in all his devotees." So, Prabhupada says in the purport that Krishna consciousness produces fearlessness. And that is Prabhupada's name, Abhay Charanaravinda. He was given the name by his father, Abhay Charan, the one who was fearless at the lotus feet of Krishna. And then his Guru Maharaj, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, named him Abhay Charanaravinda, one who is fearless at the lotus feet of So the position of a pure devotee is the pure devotee is not fearful. He doesn't have fear. The material world is based upon fear. Fear is the strongest drive or emotion in this material world. It is the most overwhelming feeling in this material world is fear. But one who is pure, who is a devotee of Krishna, who is transcendental, na sochiti na kangshiti, when he is on that Brahma Bhuta platform, prasanatma, then he does not fear, he does not have any fear, he does not have any hankering, he does not have any lamentation. He is free from all of those defects. So, that is the position of one who is pure in Krishna consciousness. So then Prabhupada says, how do we become fearful? We pray to Lord Nrsimhadev. And he protects us from fear. Whenever there is fear then in our movement, we pray to Nrsimhadev. You know, just like when His Holiness Jayapataka Swami became ill, every day in Mayapur, the devotees were doing a yajna in front of Lord Nrsimhadev to protect Maharaj. So that way we become fearless in Krishna consciousness. We pray to Lord Nrsimhadev and he will protect us, protect our bhakti. Any points?
Yes, sir, they are gone. I could over here. The devotees are there. I could over there, they are not here.
Not here. By the touch of Lord Nrsimhadev's hand on Prahlad Maharaj's head, Prahlad was completely free of all material contaminations and desires, as if he had been thoroughly cleansed. Therefore, he at once became transcendentally situated, and all the symptoms of ecstasy became manifest in his body. His heart filled with love and his eyes with tears, and thus he was able to completely capture the lotus feet of the Lord within the core of his heart. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that Prahlad Maharaj was already pure. Otherwise, why was Nrsimhadev touching him on the head? We've already heard his prayers from the fifth chapter of the Bhagavatam. We've already heard his prayers previously. Obviously, he is a pure devotee. So what has been said here, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur points out that it means that when the Lord touched him on the head, it just increased his prema. It increased his purity. But the purity was already there. It's not that he wasn't pure. It just everything became more manifest. So like a devotee may be very advanced, but by the touch of Krishna, then his ecstasy increases hundreds and thousands of times. So that is the potency of the direct contact with the Lord. It will lift one to a higher level of ecstasy. So that's what's taking place with Prahlad Maharaj. So Prabhupada indicates and emphasizes that we should give everyone this opportunity to come in contact with Krishna. What is the best way for people to come in contact with Krishna? By chanting? Yeah. By Sankirtan? Yeah, by chanting. Very good. By book distribution and? Prasadam distribution. The duty of everyone in this con is to give out as many books as possible, to distribute as much prasadam as possible, and to give the holy name to everyone. And in this way, now people will become purified in Krishna consciousness. And by that touch, just like Nrisingadev touched Prahlad, he became purified, or his purity increased. So if we touch the conditioned souls with prasadam, with books, and with the holy name, then their purity will increase. They'll become attracted to Krishna. Any points? Prahlad Maharaj fixed his mind and sight upon Lord Nrisimhadev with full attention, in complete trance. With a fixed mind, he began to offer prayers in love with a faltering voice. So once again, we're seeing in Prahlad Maharaj's example, as we did in the previous chapters, he's showing us the sajja. Sajja means the goal of Krishna consciousness, the prayojana. What is the prayojana? It is prema. It is love for Krishna. So we're seeing this is what we should be aspiring for in Krishna consciousness. The Bhagavatam says, if you are chanting the holy name of Krishna, but tears are not coming from your eyes while you are chanting, then your heart is steel framed. You have a very hard heart. So that means all of us, our heart is hard. If our heart wasn't hard, then we'd have tears of love flowing from our eyes when we are chanting the holy names of Krishna. This is mentioned by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu in Shikshastika. That if you chant properly, then tears should come from your eyes, your voice will falter, your hairs will stand on end, there'll be quivering in the body. These are bhavas. But for us, we can hardly even stay awake when you're chanting. So if you're chanting like that, then how do you expect any ecstasy to manifest? So by doing our sadhana, then we should understand what we're aiming for. The goal of our sadhana is sajja. Is to chant properly. Chanting properly means there should be tears in the eyes. Okay. Then you know you're getting somewhere. Any points?
Prema Pumaso Mahan. Very good. Prema Pumaso.
Yes.
So the confusion means that by chanting, we should fix.
Yeah. Yeah. Then when you're chanting, just like if you say someone's name, you say their name, then immediately their form appears in your mind. So if you're advancing in your chanting, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says when you get to the platform of Nishta, when anathas are greatly reduced, then the form will come into your mind when you chant. Then the form will begin to manifest automatically. So if you're chanting properly, then Krishna should manifest within your consciousness. So you can also aid that or assist that by chanting in front of pictures of Krishna, by chanting in front of the deity of Krishna, like that. Then this will assist you. And then in your mind, you can also search out the form of Krishna. Okay. That's sadhana, that is practice. But when you become more advanced, it will just come automatically. Prabhupada says the pastimes will automatically flood into the mind. So, any other thoughts?
Or chant in front of Nrisimha Maharaj.
Yeah. You can't avoid it in your house. Your whole house is. Your whole apartment is just a Tulsi ashram. by being in the forest of Vrindavan. Prahlad Maharaj prayed, "How is it possible for me, who have been born in a family of asuras, to offer suitable prayers to satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead? Even until now, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma and all the saintly persons could not satisfy the Lord by streams of excellent words. Although such persons are very qualified, being in the mode of goodness, then what is to be said of me? I am not at all qualified." Which verse is that? Number 8. So, we've heard in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita that the state of prema, or love for Krishna, is synonymous with dainya. Dainya means humility. Yeah. One who has love for Krishna is completely humble. One who is completely humble will have love for Krishna. So that actually the two are synonymous. You can't have one without the other. A pure devotee is perfectly humble. The Brihad Bhagavatamrita just states this. So we should see in our consciousness that humility is being developed. Not false humility, not a pretext of humility, not a semblance of humility, or not a show of humility, but actual humility. Without humility, you can't attain love of Godhead. So you have to cultivate humility. Learn to be humble. And then you will develop love for Krishna. Then your chanting will be effective. Once you chant the holy name of the Lord in a humble state of mind. So if you don't develop humility, you can't chant that holy name properly, continuously. Any points?
What word is Sanskrit?
Dainya.
Dainya.
Yeah, D-H-A-I-N-Y-A. Dainya.
D-H-A-H?
D-H-A-I.
A-I.
N.
N.
Dain. Y-A. Dainya. So he is in the family of demons. The point is that he has humility. So we should not be proud. We should not think I am something special, because it is said that Kalo Sudro Sambhava. Everyone in Kali Yuga is fallen by birth. None of us have. Some people do, but many people don't have particularly special qualities. We're just very fortunate that we were attracted to the Hare Krishna movement and purified by the devotees of Krishna. That is our good qualification. Otherwise, we could also be completely materialistic right now. If it wasn't just by the mercy of the devotees, we could have just gone off the track and just been completely absorbed in materialism. Sitting at home right now watching television. Such a great use of time. Hands up if you have a television in your house.
We have, but you never see it.
You have, but you never see it.
Mm-hmm.
It's behind the tulsi trees. best to get rid of your television. Make an arrangement. Please disconnect it. I mean, you can keep the television. Even I have in my ashram, I have a DVD player. It's only this big. The screen's only like little. But I watch Christian Conscious DVDs. Huh? Okay, so yeah, be doing that. But you should disconnect it from the main
thing.
That's good. Yeah. Don't get caught up with these. Don't watch television unnecessarily. It's a waste of time. People waste so much time. You get an opportunity to advance in Krishna consciousness. It's like the devotees gave me the set of Surashri Prabhu's seminar, which he did recently. I only went to one. I went to one night, but I think he did nine nights or seven nights or something. So now I've got the whole set, so I'm going to watch that. So yeah, use your time wisely. Don't waste your time watching junk. That's what they're all doing now. You just knock on the door and go in there. They're all watching television. Useless. So.
What I understood from the Prabhu who spoke from the back, that Prahlad Maharaj was thinking that he is transcendental and all the demigods are in the modern business. So, I mean, that's a pride, but I don't think Prahlad Maharaj was thinking that way.
No,
he was thinking that
he was lamenting that he was a demon.
That he is too low.
Yeah.
Yes, he was lamenting. He wasn't thinking that he is in the transcendental plane.
No, he wasn't thinking like that.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Prahlad Maharaj continued, one may possess wealth, an aristocratic family, beauty, austerity, education, sensory expertise, luster, influence, physical strength, diligence, intelligence, and mystic yogic power. But I think that even by all these qualifications, one cannot satisfy the Supreme Personality of Godhead. However, one can satisfy the Lord simply by devotional service. Gajendra did this, and thus the Lord was satisfied with him. So Prahlad Maharaj, he feels that his qualification was that he served Narad Muni. And he mentions this, he's already mentioned this in his teachings in previous chapters. He says that his good qualification was that he got the mercy of a spiritual master. So that's how we also feel. We don't have good qualification. If we have any good qualification, what is that? That we have the mercy of our spiritual master. By the mercy of the spiritual master, then Krishna will accept our service. Without the mercy of the spiritual master, Krishna cannot accept our service. One who thinks he's the devotee is not the devotee. One who thinks he's the devotee of the devotee, then he is my devotee. So that it should be our mentality.
Actually, that's what he told his father when he asked Gurambedi, did you learn these nine processes of bhakti, and he said, you will not understand it because you are following the blind people, those who are in the sense gratification, and you can learn only if he is near the dust of the Mahatmas, then you will understand it.
If a Brahmana has all 12 of the Brahminical qualifications, as they are stated in the book called Sanat Sujata, but is not a devotee and is averse to the lotus feet of the Lord, he is certainly lower than a devotee who is a dog eater, but who has dedicated everything, mind, words and activities, wealth and life, to the Supreme Lord. Such a devotee is better than such a Brahmana because the devotee can purify his whole family, whereas the so-called Brahmana, in a position of false prestige, can purify even himself. So what is the qualification of the devotee? Is that he is attractive to Krishna. Even if you have all the good qualifications of the demigods, but you do not possess devotion to Krishna, you cannot attract Krishna. Krishna is not attracted to any material quality, but he is attracted to pure devotional service. So, one who is a devotee, he tries to give everyone this opportunity. Wherever we go, whatever we do, Yari Dekha Tari Kaha, Krishna Upadesha, Amara Agaya Guruhana Tara Edesha, then everyone that we meet, we should try to somehow give them Krishna consciousness. That is the position of a devotee. And this attracts Krishna. Prabhupada said, if you want to attract Krishna, then preach vigorously. And then Krishna will become attracted. Krishna notices the devotees who preach, who take risk to give Krishna to others. And then Krishna notices those devotees. They become recognized by Krishna.
People, I wanted to give you clarification.
Yes.
Like you said that if there is a devotee in the family, at least 14 generations behind and forward, they are liberated. Does it mean that my brother, sister, everybody will be liberated by my son?
No problem.
No problem.
100%. 150.
Thank you.
Even your second cousin.
You said 250.
Yeah, I read that. I read that recently. In Mathura Dham Mahatmya, it says that. It's 200 generations. Anyway, leave that up to Krishna how many he wants to take. You just do your service and Krishna will take care of all the rest.
Should it be in the translation, who was a dog is a, or who is a dog eater?
What does it say?
It says, who is a dog eater? But it might be a dog eater in the past.
Yeah, in the past. It doesn't mean now. You should be able to work these things out for yourself.
Okay.
The Supreme Lord, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is always full, fully satisfied in Himself. Therefore, when something is offered to Him, the offering, by the Lord's mercy, is for the benefit of the devotee. For the Lord does not need service from anyone. To give an example, if one's face is decorated, the reflection of one's face in a mirror is also seen to be decorated. So here you have it. This is the verse. It is being said in the Bhagavatam. Krishna does not need our service. He doesn't need the service. Nothing you do is beneficial for Krishna. Even if you offer Krishna all of your money and your house and all of the wealth that you possess, it doesn't mean anything for Krishna. Because the first point is it's all material, and Krishna never touches the material energy. So what can you offer? Even if you buy, even if you use all of your wealth and you buy Krishna as much gold as you can with all of your wealth and you offer that to Him, it still doesn't attract Him. Because it's just material energy. Everything that Krishna wears in the spiritual world is made of spirit. Krishna wears the Kastuba Mani. Krishna wears the moon locket. He has Vaijayanti garlands. Krishna has unlimited opulence. in the spiritual world. There is nothing we can offer Krishna. So Prabhupada says here, or the Bhagavatam is saying here, Krishna does not need our service. There's nothing we can give him except for bhakti. He says in the Bhagavad Gita, Ashnami. Ashnami means I will relish the offering if it's offered with love, with bhakti, with devotion. Atram pushpam phalam soyam yume bhakya priyashti. So if you are offering with devotion, then it becomes attractive to Krishna. Otherwise, even one cup of water with a tulsi leaf, if you offer that to Krishna with love, Krishna says, I will accept it. But if you don't offer it with love, then nothing impresses him.
But,
yes, Mataji.
But you said that he doesn't trust in anything material. So how does he accept our offering?
Well, he accepts it because he transforms it into spiritual energy.
Okay.
But he's not impressed by it. That's the point. So it's like you cook your best offering for Krishna, your best meal, that he already ate this morning. Radharani already cooked for him this morning.
Yeah.
So what did you make? Anything impressive? So nothing we make impresses Krishna. He's not impressed. He's attracted by devotion. So there's nothing that we can offer him which is impressive.
Mm-hmm.
Because he already has everything.
You mentioned that we can only offer him bhakti. In the Bhakti Sutras, the one that is from book, there it mentions that bhakti is not something that we have. Bhakti is the prasad that we get from Krishna. We don't have bhakti. Bhakti is a prasad. All we can do is an effort to obtain bhakti. An effort is what we are doing. That will always be material. It will never be spiritual. The feeling is what we can give him. If he does not take that feeling, what else will he take? On what ground will he give us bhakti? It's the feeling only we can give him. Nothing else.
The feeling is bhakti. That's what bhakti is. That's what Krishna says all through the Gita. Bhakti mama vijanati yavanyas chasmi tatvata. Krishna says, only I can be understood by bhakti.
Krishna is so compassionate.
Hmm?
Krishna is so compassionate. After speaking Patram Pushpam Palam Goya, immediately he says, that if you're not on this platform, whatever you do, he somehow wants us to be with him. And in the following verse, he immediately says, Shubha, 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 all Shubha and Ashubha, everything will be destroyed just because you're following him. You will become pure, and now you can do that. Patram Pushpam Palam Goya.
Okay. Therefore, although I was born in a demoniac family, I may, without a doubt, offer prayers to the Lord with full endeavor, as far as my intelligence allows. Anyone who has been forced by ignorance to enter the material world may be purified of material life if he offers prayers to the Lord and hears the Lord's prayers. O my Lord, all the demigods headed by Lord Brahma are sincere servants of your Lordship, who are situated in a transcendental position. Therefore, they are not like us, Prahlad and his father, the demon, Hiranyakashipu. Your appearance in this fearsome form is your pastime for your own pleasure. Such an incarnation is always meant for the protection and improvement of the universe. My Lord Nisringhadev, please, therefore, cease your anger now that my father, the great demon Hiranyakashipu, has been killed. Since even saintly persons take pleasure in the killing of a scorpion or a snake, all the worlds have achieved great satisfaction because of the death of this demon. Now they are confident of their happiness, and they will always remember your auspicious incarnation in order to be free from fear. So the Bhagavatam mentions that even a saintly person is happy when a snake or a scorpion is dead, because they are envious creatures. Prabhupada, he saw one time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur in Mayapur. He ordered that the cobra be killed in the courtyard of the ashram. And Prabhupada was confused. Why would a saintly person order that the cobra be killed? But then later he read the Bhagavatam says itself that a saintly person is happy when a serpent is killed, because the serpent is envious. What is worse than a serpent? It is a human being who is like a serpent, who is envious. So when those people are killed, we're happy. Very happy. Just like you see all these, people in the news who do all the horrible crimes. In India, they did the horrible crime. Australia also, horrible crime. They just kill them. I'll kill them. If you haven't got the courage to do it, I'll kill them. Give me the sword, I'll just kill him. What's the problem? We want to see them dead. Better they're dead, because they're envious. They want to harm others unnecessarily. That's a snake. Snake wants to harm you unnecessarily. Just like the horse and the scorpion came to the river. So the horse started to cross the river, and the scorpion said, "Put me on your back so I can cross the river with you." And the horse said, "You'll just sting me." He said, "No, I won't sting you, because if I sting you, then we'll both drown." So halfway across the river, the scorpion stung him. And the horse said, "Now we're both going to die." And he said, "What can I do? I'm a scorpion." So that is the nature of the scorpion and the snake. Even there's no reason, they will still attack you. So some people are like that. There's no reason, but they'll still harm others. So they should be killed quickly, without court case. You see, in the Bhagavatam, Maharaj preached it. He didn't have a court case when Kali was attacking the bull. He didn't say, "Okay, let's go to court, for 15 years, work it all out." No, he just took out his sword and he just ready to kill him. End of story. So that's what you do. You get these people, you just kill them. That's it. End of story. Shoot them on national television. 6 o'clock news. And everyone's watching. First thing, shoot them. Right? And then turn around to the camera and say, "And we will shoot all of you who do the same thing." And then start shooting them. And then you'll see everything will calm down a little bit. If people are scared, they'll calm down. That's the way to control them. It's like the kids. Sometimes, you say, "Don't do this, don't that," but finally you have to say, "Hey," and they calm down. There has to be some control. "My Lord, who are never conquered by anyone, I am certainly not afraid of your ferocious mouth and tongue, your eyes bright like the sun, or your frowning eyebrows. I do not fear your sharp pinching teeth, your garland of intestines, your mane soaked with blood, or your high wedge-like ears. Nor do I fear your tumultuous roaring, which makes elephants flee to distant places, or your nails, which are meant to kill your enemies." So Prabhupada says, just like the cub of the lion, does not fear the lion. Even though the lioness, she puts the cub in the mouth. You see, when they grab the lions, they pick it up there. Or the cats, they pick up the kitten from there, back of the neck. So those teeth, Prabhupada says, if the cat picks up the kitten, there's no fear. But if the cat uses those teeth on the rat, that's it, dead. So the lion, the cub, never feels fearful. So we don't feel fearful of Krishna, even though he's so ferocious and powerful. But the non-devotee will feel fearful. Okay. Prahlad did not feel fearful, but Hiranyakashipu was full of fear. O most powerful, insurmountable Lord, who are kind to the fallen souls, I have been put into the association of demons as a result of my activities, and therefore I am very much afraid of my condition of life within this material world. When will that moment come when you will call me to the shelter of your lotus feet, which are the ultimate goal for liberation from conditioned life? O Great One, O Supreme Lord, because of combination with pleasing and displeasing circumstances, and because of separation from them, one is placed into a most regrettable position within heavenly or hellish planets, as if burning in a fire of lamentation. Although there are many remedies by which to get out of miserable life, any such remedies in the material world are more miserable than the miseries themselves. Therefore, I think that the only remedy is to engage in your service. Kindly instruct me in such service. So it is said in the purport that whichever womb you get born in the material world, because Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that one who is born in this world is sure to die, and one who dies is sure to take birth again. So it doesn't matter which womb you get born in, 8,400,000 different types, he said all of those births, they lead to suffering. Doesn't matter where you get born. You're destined to suffer. That's what the material world is about. Material world key. Oh my Lord, Nrisingadev, by engaging in your transcendental loving service in the association of devotees who are liberated souls, hamsas, I shall become completely uncontaminated by the association of the three modes of material nature, and be able to chant the glories of your Lordship, who are so dear to me. I shall chant your glories, following exactly in the footsteps of Lord Brahma and his disciplic succession. In this way, I shall undoubtedly be able to cross the ocean of nescience. My Lord Nrisingadev, O Supreme, because of a bodily conception of life, embodied souls neglected and not cared for by you, cannot do anything for their betterment. Whatever remedies they accept, although perhaps temporarily beneficial, are certainly impermanent. For example, a father and mother cannot protect their child. A physician and medicine cannot relieve a suffering patient. And a boat on the ocean cannot protect a drowning man. My dear Lord, everyone in this material world is under the modes of material nature, being influenced by goodness, passion, and ignorance. Everyone from the greatest personality, Lord Brahma, down to the small ant, works under the influence of these modes. Therefore, everyone in this material world is influenced by your energy. The cause for which they work, the place where they work, the time when they work, the matter due to which they work, the goal of life that they have considered final, and the process for obtaining this goal, all are nothing but manifestations of your energy. Indeed, since the energy and energetic are identical, all of them are but manifestations of you. So Prahlad Maharaj said that we should follow in the disciplic succession of Lord Brahma. So how does Lord Brahma pray? We should learn the prayers of our disciple succession. Prabhupada quoted in the first verse of this chapter, Narottama Das Thakur. So we should learn the prayers of perfected souls. Narottama Das Thakur, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, Srila Prabhupada, right? The Bhagavatam, Narada, Prahlad, Brahma, all of these great persons, we should learn their prayers. And then we should try to understand the mood in which they offer their prayers. And that will lead us to Prema Bhakti. Srila Prabhupada ki.
Yeah.